Today, our guest speaker is Randy Yeh, former CEO of Lucent, to serve, and now he's serving seniors. So I'm just going to hand the baton over to you.
Great. Thank you, Bella. To introduce Dr. Randy Yeh, he was born in Qingdao, China in 1948. His family moved to Taiwan when he grew up in Taiwan. He came to the U.S. to study at university and got a PhD from the University of Texas at Austin in computer sciences. He went to work at Bell Labs and AT&T in New Jersey and rose through the ranks to become president of AT&T Taiwan Communications. He was a corporate vice president at AT&T Corporate, and then he became chairman and CEO of Lucent Technologies in China. At some point during his career, as a rising executive with a major U.S. corporation, there was that second form of capital that began to kick in, and he began finding himself engaged in being of service to seniors in China, which led him to found the New Path Foundation. So, Randy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear
Great.
me, Arye?
Thank you. And so really there are kind of three parts to the questions I'd like to ask you in our conversation this morning. The first has to do with the story of how you became an executive with AT&T. The second has to do with what led you to found New Path. And the third set of questions I want to explore is some particulars about New Path. What do you do? How do you operate? The values, the operational principles, and so on. So I'd like to begin by asking you, really, how did you get to become a senior executive and then CEO with AT&T and Lucent? What was it about you, your family background, your early years that set you on on this particular path in your life?
First of all, thank you, IA. And may I just express how warm I feel and how honored I feel to be among this community. And the sharing at the beginning is really great. I feel very much part of that among you. To answer your first question, I guess, I'm just like many of my peers, working hard and have a fairly positive mindset, willing to take on responsibilities, but that's not really enough. I think the biggest thing of all is, and I just met one of my former bosses to tell him, I have many people help me. Even at student times, at critical moments, there always seems to be somebody is willing to lend a hand for a difficult part of their journey or as a mentor. So I'm very grateful, I guess, to the help I've gotten along the way and the lessons I was able to learn from them. And then I guess I'm very much interested in the outside. That is the trend. And for instance, the AT&T, I think I'm very interested in what is the company as a whole is going. So I think that allow me to have a little bit better understanding what may be coming and what I might be able to do to enhance myself to give what I'm good at in the future. So I think that kind of helped me a little bit along my path. And of course, the biggest one is always luck, that that you can't choose, you know.
So I'm interested in the next to last thing you said. It sounds like you said that your interest led you to sort of see the big picture of the company and what was happening and where it was going and what was needed, and you felt motivated to jump in there and respond to that. Is that right?
Yes. For instance, you know, I was, let me see. Yeah, I became sort of like an executive in the Bell Labs side, but that's research and development. I'm really quite interested in interact with people. So I'm more interested to move into different parts of the corporation. Then I saw AT&T decided or is moving on the path to have agreement with the government. So they will let go all the Bell operating companies, and then they will be allowed to expand into internationally. I felt I have a special skill for Asia, so I have volunteered to be a technical mentor for the sales team in Taiwan. But when they're on my own time and help the sales team eventually in a couple of years to achieve a fairly significant sale in one of the business units which I was in. So that sort of got me to Asia, to Japan, a couple of years later, right?
It's interesting that you used the word volunteer, which wound up taking you in such a different direction in the second part of your life. But you were volunteering in your business career as well.
Right, because nobody asked me to do that. I was the technical mentor for the U.S. West team based in Denver, but I volunteered to also take on Taiwan, and nobody objected to. So.
I saw somewhere on the Service Space website someone quoting you as saying, somehow along the way I fell in love with money. Is that true?
Yes. It's not somehow. My dad, even though he was a Second World War hero, but he got sacked in the middle of the career. And so one time when I was very young, I followed him to a friend's place, and my dad, would like to borrow some, not really a big amount of money from him, but he doesn't have it. He didn't have it. So we just returned. I guess that planted a fairly important seed in my mind that money is very important. I got kind of worried about our future, and so I developed hunger for money since then, I think. Yeah, insecurity, I guess.
So money became a way of restoring the security and maybe a little bit of the honor of your family?
Not so much honor. I didn't feel we are dishonored, but I feel, we may be into hard times. I was very young. I was maybe 7 or 8.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your father as a World War II hero? I think that's a very interesting part of your story.
Oh, my dad, he became an orphan at 6, so he didn't, accidental, because he didn't have a chance to go to school. And so his brother taught him some basic reading, and one day he got a chance, a relative said in a military school, very, very far away in China, that they would provide, you know, free schooling. So his brother, you know, sent him off, and he went as a very young person. And so he got to study. But then he became a very good military person, especially in terms of strategy and tactics in actual battles. So he was actually in the last segment of the Second World War for the war in Golden Mountain. I believe that's the highest battleground for Second World War, over 3,200 kilometers. 3,200 meters, right? And that was a very famous war. So.
And understand from what you had said to me earlier that he was honored in China at that time in World War II as one of the people who really protected China at that time from the Japanese invasion.
Yes, I think some of you may know about the Flying Tigers, that they have helped China during the Second World War. And that's the same path that my father fought the Japanese and pushed them out of the Yunnan. So there's a path remain from the southwest part of China all the way to India. Eventually, that path allowed a major comeback, and also along with many other situations, the Japanese was defeated. Yes.
I'm just curious, Randy. Did your father live to see your business success?
No, that's a regret because no, he didn't.
I can imagine how proud he would have felt of you. I want to fast forward now. Okay, so you at the time that you got started volunteering to serve seniors, is that the time when you were serving as CEO of Lucent China?
Correct. Yes.
So can you describe to us how did you first, what led you in the beginning to start volunteering to serve seniors?
Well, I started volunteering when I was in college, but at that time, I really was serving on my own needs, even though I wasn't aware of that. It's kind of like a cloud coming to me and then floated away. I heard about an orphanage and the situation of the children in it. I was really touched, so I went to teach them English, math, I forgot. And then in 7 months, I sort of just exited. So it's not until when I was about 40, you know, this is almost 10-some years after my grandma passed away. My grandma had a major influence on me, the way she loved me. I think it's not unusual. You know, I think many grandmas love their grandchildren very dearly, and I was one of those lucky ones. I became very grateful and really missed my grandma after she passed away. So I think I always said I'm a very slow student of life. I think maybe after 10-some years, I sort of, this love and gratitude transformed into a general love for all the elderly. So I began to have this thought of wanting to go into a nursing home to accompany some perhaps lonely elders, but I was very busy. You know, in Japan, I was flying all the time. In Taiwan, I can do it, but I finally decided after much thought, because I was a CEO then also, I wanted to spend time to accompany my children growing up, so I let it go. When I went to China, my children are older. And this is just becoming part of my life. So I want it to be done. So I went to China, and the same year I found this, I guess it's like an old commune home for the poor peasants without children, and they lost their capacity to farm. So after I went in there, I stayed. That's how I started.
So did I understand you correctly as saying that it was you wanted to be more with your children, and that's what led you to step down from your business career?
No.
I didn't hear that right. Yeah.
I'm sorry. In Taipei, I was very busy as CEO, and I wanted to start serving the elders, but my children were small.
Ah.
So I decided with the limited time, I want to accompany them.
I see.
Yes. So in Beijing, you know, they are bigger. So.
In Beijing, they were bigger, and then you had time to start.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Thank you. So you started as an individual. You would go visit them at this commune in Beijing. So tell us, how did things evolve from the point where you as an individual were going and volunteering to serve seniors in this home to the point where you founded the New Path Foundation?
Yes, I didn't expect that. I didn't want to do it initially. I never thought about it. But I started serving four poor elders without children. I was really enjoying my time. And then some of my colleagues, my family, my friends found out about this, and they will sort of join me over the weekend. And one of the foot massage doctor I got to know in China, I talked to him just in chit-chat, and he decided to join. So there's becoming a group of people. Of course, people come and go, but yet there's a group of people stayed also. So after maybe 5 years or so, I saw, you know, how the joy in their eyes and in the senior eyes, and also saw some of the volunteers. I mean, the friends and colleagues, they just withdraw, you know, with a setback. I guess gradually I kind of put the so-called volunteers, because there's no such thing as volunteer in China at that time, but the so-called volunteers into my heart also. So I sort of wanted to support the volunteers. So I talked to my wife then and said, can we put some of our savings out so we can support all these volunteers to do these kind of things? And she is very supportive. So we just formed the New Path Foundation. That's how it is.
So you started just yourself. You noticed other people who were also volunteering. And then that community grew, it sounds like kind of organically. You didn't have any special plan for that. And then it reached the point where you also wanted to support the volunteers. So my understanding is that you have funded New Path Foundation entirely from your own personal savings. Did you actually wind up paying salaries to anybody, or how did you go about expanding the work of the New Path Foundation?
Well, it's sort of just naturally developed in the following sense that it's about that time also I felt quite abundant. So I've changed my mindset somehow that I really much would like to share. And not just the time experience, but also money I've accumulated. So at that time, I decided I would just exit from Lucent. I took a very early retirement. And then in China, it's not easy to operate a foreign foundation or NGO. So I also was engaged in help to build schools for those poor children who couldn't afford to go to school. I mean, it's a different China at that time. So I got engaged both from company-wise and also personally with Project Hope. And so I got to know the leaders very well. And when they found out that I'm out of Lucent and I want to do this, they just said to me, it's not easy to do this. Why don't you come and join us? Then, you know, you can operate still independently. So we contribute part of the New Path Fund to this China Youth Development Foundation and become a special endowment with an independent board under them. So I guess, again, very lucky. At the right time, you know, the two leaders came and offered. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't know what to do.
Interesting. All of these pieces of your journey, serving the elders, serving the volunteers, and then teaming up with Project Hope and organizations in China. I'm curious, Randy. Did you at any point was it difficult to let go of your life as a CEO of the income and the perks and the prestige? Was there any part of that was difficult to do?
I think so, because I'm just a common person, so I enjoy that kind of glory and platform and, you know, quite a bit of power, that kind of thing. But I guess initially, after the foundation, I also took on, at the very beginning, I also took on some other things like venture capital and also, excuse me, helping the large China business, national business at that time, to transform because they were in difficulties. So I did a few different things. And then I guess after a while, I found I just naturally dropped those one by one. Also, you know, I could go to another major corporation, of course, but that one didn't interest me at the beginning anymore. So eventually, it sort of just naturally, I felt, oh, I enjoy this New Path thing the most. So it just, you know, it just become this way.
Yes, yes. I'd like to ask you a few questions now specifically about New Path, starting with just the scope of the operations. Where is New Path involved at this point, and what are some of the projects that you're doing?
Okay, a very quick rundown. After the senior program started up in Beijing, there's a huge migration flow, about probably the biggest in mankind, about 250 million people over 20 years, still going on right now from rural to the city. So many of the children were growing up in the rural villages without parents or just one mother. So in 2004, we started another long-term accompaniment program for the volunteers, such like in Beijing. We'll write letters to be a friend with this we call little friends, and they will also gather together to take the train and go to the remote villages and visit the homes of the little friends. So this program started in 2004, and then in 2008, I got that's another long story, but somehow I went to India and found this wonderful partner who is very devoted to orphanage with volunteer fathers and mothers. And we team up to just lead the volunteers of Delhi, of India, into the slum areas for the disadvantaged children there. And then I guess 2010, I felt after 10 years of dual path in Beijing, I've certainly done what I could have done. So I took half of the new path foundation money remaining, plus the original ones left in Beijing, and gave to 7 partners who have been with me at that time, 5 to 7 years, and gave to them, and really to the land of China as a gift. And so they, after some hesitation, they took it. So in 2012, they formed an independent foundation, still doing long-term accompaniment services. I still visit them. Just like next week, I'm going to go visit them as an old volunteer. But all those 7 people are really Chinese. They grew up there. They, you know, that's their land. And so then in 2012, I moved back to the U.S. I was very lucky. A year before, I started a senior companionship program again in Houston, in one of the Westwood nursing home. Now it's 3 bases. We're collaborating with one of the NGO in Houston also. I was most happy that just this year, my own hometown, Taiwan, I was able to have opportunity to collaborate with a wonderful local partner there again to start the again a program for senior accompaniment. So basically, that took us to today.
So you've been collaborating and supporting volunteers in China and Taiwan and India, and now in Houston. I noticed in reading a little bit about New Path that two things came out at me. One was this idea of accompanying. You use that word to describe the relationship between the volunteer and the senior or the young person. Can you describe what you mean by accompanying?
Accompaniment, to me, is a period of time, you know, that we are willing on our own to put the others, other person's needs as our primary concern. And that's the key, I think, to support them, to support their needs as our primary concern.
You have a kind of, I don't know what to call it, a set of guidelines or methodology that you offer to volunteers who are choosing to be in that accompaniment role. Can you say more about what those guidelines are for your volunteers?
Very simply, I think I divided, we divided into three parts in a journey. As I started myself, you know, I started to support others with wonderful intent, but really is not aware of my own needs, and I'm not capable of understanding their other people's needs. So my support sometimes or accompaniment is not does not bring good result. So in our training, we try to provide our volunteers a training on mindfulness, so we can take time out and to really be with ourselves and to cherish our existence, to understand our own inner voices sometimes we missed, and to understand our own needs and be able to support us. Once we can support ourselves, I always say that will lay a really great foundation to support others. Because we felt understanding is the foundation of support or accompaniment. And then we also focused on devoted, what we call devoted listening, where we are willing to really make a choice first because it can always be no. But make a yes, but then really, really be there for that person and to understand not just the words, but the feelings and perhaps the cry of the need and to support them together. We felt with this kind of accompaniment, then it can lend warmth, strength to the other. And then eventually, as we become understanding ourselves more, I think my own experiences, we were able to see things more clearly, and some of the needs within us will sort of just dissolve by themselves. Sometimes we will gain new angles and insight and allow us to put let go some of the other needs as well. And this time, the major sort of desire of our life will become very clear, will allow us to make choices more easily, and also gives us more space, that when others come to us, we have more space for them. So we're naturally will be able to support them as our primary concern without too much effort.
What strikes me so strongly, Randy, is how the inner work and the outer work are so integrated in how you guide your volunteers. It really reminds me of the the core value of service space: change yourself, change the world.
That's so right.
I have two more questions for you, and then, Belle, I think it'll be time for us to open it up. So the first question I have is that sometimes we ask in these calls, for people on this call or for people in the service space community who are interested in supporting your New Path Foundation work, what can we do if any of us are interested in supporting your work?
Let me think about this. I think a compliment is everywhere. And by listening to the sharing at the beginning from our host and others, I think we are already together, because a compliment doesn't come from me. It's within us, all of us, who experience that. I mean, it may not be for a poor elder or a disadvantaged youth, but we will be accompanying our wives, husbands, children, parents, our work associate, even in a competitive situation, we can choose a company to support. And so I think we are all in this. And in terms of support the program, I guess if anyone is interested to doing the kind of things we have been doing, what I can say is just write to me, randy@newpathfound.org, and I think I will and we will do our best to share what we know, to share our experiences. That's, I think, what we can do.
Thank you, Randy. Beautiful. Bella, are you there?
I am here. I don't know. I'm so humbled by Randy's response just now. It's so beautiful. I could feel his, just like his genuine call to service, from his heart. But we are going to open up the call now for our guests to be able to ask Randy more questions. And there's already someone in the queue. Michelle, are you there?
I am. Yes, Randy, first of all, just 非常感谢你今天来跟我们讲话。 I'm just thanking him for joining us in China. I lived in Beijing for a few years in the early 80s and have been back there a number of times. But in particular, I shared earlier about how my interest is in the whole and looking at the whole of humanity. I've lived in many places around the world, including China, and am now very involved with the Sustainable Development Goals as a conversation that's coming out of the United Nations, being prepared now for ratification next year, and how that is a conversation for alignment. And I was very moved by your sharing about, you know, what earlier when you spoke about how you got involved with leadership in the company that you ran, and about how that was about looking at the future and where we're going and the whole of the entity. And I'm sort of interested in that for humanity. So I was wondering if you saw anything about that. But in particular, I was moved in your work with the elderly, because when we look at what's happening for humanity, one of the things that's happening is we have many more elderly people, and that will continue. So we need ways of dealing with that and accompanying many people who don't have families to do that for them. So thank you for that. And so one is, do you have any thoughts about the picture of humanity as a whole? And secondly, I'm working with people now in Africa, and particularly in Zambia, and I was hoping to maybe introduce you to them, looking at the elderly there, particularly in the wake of the AIDS problems there.
Thank you, Michelle. Well, for humanity, unfortunately, I actually feel kind of pessimistic in terms of where we are headed as a race. But yet, I feel and yet I think every one of us can bring the light out of our own. You know, just like the endless river, each of us is like a small drop in there. We can turn ourselves to be more pure. And I think that's what an individual life journey can become, whether it's in service or in daily life. For humanity, though, I think the collective force is pulling us towards an undesirable direction at this time. I'm sorry.
Hi, Randy. This is Bella. I would be really interested in learning. I know you've shared some beautiful stories, but connected to, you know, your response just now and the direction that we're headed in as a human race, can you share some one or two stories from your time in Delhi? I would love to hear a little bit more about the work you did in Delhi and your experience there, and how that maybe contributed as well to your own path and your commitment to your own self-purification, regardless of the direction that we're headed in as a collective.
Right. It really doesn't impact me that much, but I have to say what I believe. In Delhi, let me share with you a small story. I've never been to India, except many years ago, I accompanied my former wife because she wanted to have a meditation in in Vipassana. So we went there to a mountain near Mumbai. After the session ended, we stayed in Mumbai in a very nice hotel. In the evening, I went out and took a walk, and there's just literally people lying on the streets. And I saw a girl or a young mother, because I know she's a young mother, because even though she's maybe just 14 years, but she has a baby in her, she's feeding her or something. Then I made eye contact with her. And I never spoke to her, but I carried the eye contact back with me. India is a country over a billion souls. I don't know a single one. So it took me several years until the birthday of my 60th. Finally, I decided the best gift to give myself is to step on the soil of Delhi. Mm. And I did. And I stayed there a couple times, long stay. And since nobody knew me, I had a difficult time to connect. And but finally, I got connected to this wonderful, wonderful partner. And we jointly went to this Kanaka Duga, which is one of the bigger slums in Delhi. When I first time went in there, it just like the feeling I first time stepped into that poor elder's nursing home in Jiangtaixiang in Beijing. I knew at that time I will come back. And because when I saw the children, little children there, I felt I was talking to that girl, the young mother, even though I would never see her again. I knew these can be all her siblings, younger brothers and younger sisters. I knew I can come back to accompany them to grow up. And I told this story to the Indian young people, volunteers. I said, would you join me to go there? Many of them did. So that's how I got started in Delhi.
Wow, thank you. Prakash, did you have a question?
Yes, Mila, thank you. Yeah, that was very powerful, Andy, thank you. I was drawn to take you back in memory to the time with your grandmother. I was deeply touched when you were sharing about her being such a pillar of shaping your life journey and trajectory. I was going to request you to probably share, if you now sit back and think about those times, what really comes into your memory space vividly? Some experiences, some stories, or some values that she really instilled in your life. Again, thank you for everything that you shared. And thank you all, Forest Farmers. Thank you.
I think there are three things I can think of. One is, again, when I was very little, maybe, I don't know, one day I should be at school, but I was not. I was naughty when I was young. So I wandered into this kitchen or dining room, sort of. I saw my grandma, and she's very focused in doing something. I think I never talked to her that day, but I suddenly realized one thing. She's making a bento. She's making a lunchbox. And that lunchbox is for me. And all of a sudden, I understood all these years, and then all the way until I graduated from high school, she is always there, making that lunchbox so caringly focused. Mm-hmm. So that image is very important to me, because I think in accompaniment, one thing is being there for you and unwavering and consistently, not changing, always the same. So that's one thing that impact me. I think I always have that image within me to give me strength, that I know I'm worthy of being loved, you know. And so second thing is, second thing is, you know, my father is like that too. So I was very lucky. But my mom, you know, she is really devoted to make our children to, you know, become better, that kind of thing. So she cares about my, you know, GPA from school, even when I was in primary school. And but I noticed one thing is my academic performance. Also, I was very naughty, so sometimes the, you know, teacher would tell my parents or my grandma would know, you know, through friends that I was did some bad things at school. But and my academic performance also is inconsistent. But I noticed it doesn't matter to him, to her. Mm. There's no difference. Mm. Whatever. So that, I think, I remembered. I think I learned from her what is unconditional.
Mm.
I think this story is good enough. Yeah.
Mm.
So.
It also goes to say how keenly an observer and you're taking all in. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Randy. I have this image now of your grandmother every morning making you this bento box with so much love and concentrating on making sure that it has everything that you'll need for your nutrition. It's really beautiful. So much love in something so small and simple. I did want to, I guess, ask you, I wanted to probe a little bit more about your response to Michelle's earlier question and, you know, your just that you know, you're feeling that we're not headed in necessarily a positive direction. And I think a lot of us on this call maybe commiserate or, you know, feel the same way. And so I would be interested in learning about your practices, you know, in your practices that help you to anchor yourself and continue onwards and give you faith, you know, that regardless of what's happening as a collective, you know, you keep doing your small part in this ocean and creating those drops of compassion, those teardrops of compassion, as one of our friends in the ecosystem says. Do you have a spiritual practice, meditation practice, something that brings stillness within you, in addition to the tremendous service that you do?
I don't have a religious belief, but I do have a spiritual belief that I feel each one of us have a choice. We're capable to be our own masters. And my choice, my ideal is to live in the mindset of love. So once that is clear to me, all the other choices of life have become easier. And I think, and I feel more and more by practicing what I call choosing love in any situation, that no matter where I go in the future, which does not worry me that much, that I can already be in a peaceful, abundant, and joyful state now. And that's what I like to be.
Bella, this is Aryeh. Wendy, who's here with me, would like to ask a question, if that's okay.
Yeah, of course. Go ahead.
Yes. I'm listening to this conversation and being very inspired, and I've spent my whole career as a nurse. And what Randy is describing sounds so much like core of nursing, like to accompany someone as a path of growth, and that I was really related to how to be, that you're really teaching your volunteers or working with your volunteers on how to be conscious as you go through the accompanying process, and also how this is so much a relationship with everyone, both giving and receiving, and how conscious that we have to be about this. And so I was wondering if, Randy, you ever work with the staff in these facilities with these to help them with the same values as well as the volunteers, and how important this would be to healthcare workers.
Yes, we do. Actually, I often share with my volunteers my own view is that we are not that important in the nursing home, because the amount of time we spend are little compared to the staff and also the caretakers. Those are the important people. That so also when we accompany, it's equal. So it cannot be just focused on the elder that we serve. In China, usually there are 2 to 4 even in a room. So while our primary relationship is with the elder we serve, but if we have a loving mindset, then it has to be an equal mindset. So it will have to. Our presence will make the others feel we also care about them. And this goes with the staff and also the caretaker as well. For my own, you know, one of the, I guess I call him Mr. Su here, that who I accompany. I accompany him for 16 years. And but the 4 years before he passed away, he was bedbound. And he even waved hand to tell me to go away. He said, it's useless. So I turned to support his caretaker, Xiao Chen, and we became very good friends. So when we accompany someone, you have to understand what his real needs are, and to support that need, I guess. I'm very much agreeing with you.
I just think back and wish I had this kind of mentoring years ago when I went through my training. It would have been really invaluable, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Randy, I want to go back to a little bit further in your past and, you know, your transition from, you know, leading a corporation to just transitioning to 100% service. And it's earlier, I wanted to ask you if, you know, you encountered any resistance from your family, but it seems that your family joined you on the path, which is really beautiful. But I'm wondering, did you encounter any resistance from, you know, other peers, colleagues, that made you question, wait, what am I doing here? Am I really doing the right thing? Or was it really just kind of a smooth transition for you.
Yes, because when I explained to you to my friends what I was doing, after listening politely for maybe a long time, they will always conclude, oh, okay, so you're retired. So it's not a thing. It's not, you know, they, so sometimes I will feel a little out of place, I guess. My former wife was supportive, but she also wanted me to continue to be in the corporate path, I think. She would prefer it, but she didn't fight with me, which I really appreciated. So most people would say, why you do this? So, yes. So it's a bit of getting used to. Yeah, I'm more following an inner path. So it's helped me to balance because I'm not looking outside as I become more mindful in my own life, that I have this more inner path, inner calm, which supports me.
Do you have, you know, as you grow in love and as your love sort of gives you that faith, do you still have challenges with your own inner fears, insecurities, other parts of your ego that continue to come up in your life? I'm not sure if my question's clear. I can.
Of maybe, course. Even today. I think the biggest gift, now I can call it a gift, but I was devastated when my former wife, Shishen, decided to leave me. And I knew her, I loved her since she was 19. And so after 36 years, this is devastating to me. And but anyway, out of a long period of time, I finally was able to learn. I wrote a letter eventually from her because I knew everything. I knew all the things she said, I said along the way. But eventually, I spent 3 weeks to write a letter from Shishen to me and saying one thing. And, you know, after I wrote that letter, I finally understood there is a different, I mean, this is a world of many angles. And when I shifted my angles, everything becomes so different and understandable. And so I become a firm believer that anything, say anything, anybody say anything, I don't dare to judge because I know they must have a good reason for it now. But still, I have to confess to you, that only knocked maybe 50% of my pride out of me, a lot. But I was a very proud person, very, very deep inside. So I'm still learning on this path. Yeah, I'm just a student, old student. Old and slow.
Gayatri?
Thank you, Bela. Randy, so beautiful listening to you. I really resonated with the gems that you have shared, devoted listening and accompaniment, very beautiful. And I really see that, you know. Oftentimes I visit a senior friend of mine here, and it really changes their day. I mean, he feels so much joy and happiness when somebody is just there to connect with them and speak with them and, you know, just be there and help them share what they are feeling and thinking. It really makes a lot of difference. Thank you so much for bringing this all into light and making this happen for so many elders out there. So what are your thoughts or experiences on the growing gap between the younger generation and the elderly. There's so much disconnect, and people don't want to sometimes share their time or be with them. They're like, I want to do my own things, and I'm not able to spend that time with them. So what are your thoughts and experiences on that? I would love to hear. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. I think, yes, there are generation gaps and so forth. There are different racial gaps. There are gender gaps. But I strongly feel that at a very deep core, we are all the same. We all envy. We all laugh. Mm. We all hate. We all feel lonely sometimes. So that is the level, if you can go to, then everyone can connect to everyone else. So the first thing we try to suggest to our volunteers, especially the younger ones, can you be alone with yourself without doing anything?
Wow.
Can you feel your existence? Can you give yourself a gift of life? If not 30 minutes, how about just 10, 15 minutes to know you're here, to say hello to the world? If we can get the young people to be mindful, to understand themselves, then many of those kind of, I would say, superficial things will melt away. Because, let me share a story. I often share a story with them that when I started to to serve the elders in the this old commune place, they were peasants all life. They are much older than me, and they don't read. You know, they didn't read, and they don't travel. So, and we are so different. But as I said, once I transformed myself, I don't know what happened. It just happened. I feel no distance with the elders. Mm-hmm. If you understand that, when you feel no distance, nobody can stop you. So I found they use hot water to soak their feet in the evening. So I just started to say, I would like to do that for you. They were a little shy, but when you are really, you're genuinely really care and like to do that, they can feel it. So I often said to the young people, you have nothing to say? Don't say anything. Can you just be there? Can you make a choice before you go into that room? Am I willing to give a small piece, yes, maybe just an hour, hour and a half, to this person I say I care? If you're willing and going, knowing that you choose to be there for that person.
Beautiful.
Wow. Thank you. One more question for you from one of our...
Sure.
Hi, Dinesh.
Hi. Thanks for allowing me the time. Randy, I feel like I'm mini you in as I've heard your stories and your life journey. And I do work with a senior center here in Silicon Valley. But one thing that keeps tugging me in the back of my mind, even though I do volunteer work and I'm semi-retired and all that, that maybe I should have accomplished more in my technical life. I should have made millions of dollars and provided employment to all these children that you were talking about rather than just holding their hand or going and giving a little contribution. That I should have aimed higher. And I'm, like I said, I'm semi-retired. I don't know whether I'll get to doing that or not. But how do you ever have that feeling? And how would one handle that kind of a feeling?
Well, everyone has to make a choice for himself. what I feel is, you know, there are plenty of people, for instance, in China, even at that time when I started serving the elders, that they are very eager and doing wonderful work in providing poor children without money to go to school, you know, like scholarships and so forth. I think that's equally good. What I chose is I feel, because I, again, from my grandma, that I think that knowing and feeling I'm worthy to be loved and knowing that I am loved is something unbeatable to me, that whether I'm rich or poor, I feel warm and happy and fulfilled and willing to reach out for my potential to see what I can do. So I think for the elderly, what we intend to bring through this time and again, always coming back in the snowy days or in the hot summer days, is at that time to walk in, to see that light in their eyes when they saw us, and to without saying anything. I often said to my volunteer, if you're really willing, choose to be there for them, when you first saw them and they saw you, your service is completed. It's done. So that's what I chose. So.
And thank you. Thank you for giving that answer. Thank you.
Gosh, thank you so much, Randy. This has been such an amazing call. Well, my heart is just feeling so much gratitude right now. I'm just so grateful that I had the opportunity to host this call and share a space with you, Randy, and Arye for your beautiful moderation and just all the callers that co-created this space. And Randy, the images that you've sort of left in my mind, I think I'll be carrying with me for the rest of the day. You know, just the image of your grandmother making your bento box, and the image of you making eye contact with that child in India, and just that incredible human connection that you feel, and that you, I can't find the right word, maybe not empower others to feel, but you, I feel that, Randy, you open that up for others. You open up spaces in their hearts for them to feel connection to themselves, connection to self, and connection to others, and to feel worthy of love. And that, you know, regardless of the direction that our world is heading in and the human race is heading in, each small teardrop of compassion that you're adding, you know, to our collective ocean is, it's just, it's so, so beautiful and so appreciated. And just thank you. I hope one day maybe our paths cross in person and I have the privilege and honor and blessing to meet you. And yeah, I think we'll just go into a moment of silence and gratitude for Randy, for each other, for the wisdom that was shared in this hour and a half of space time. And after that, everyone will have an opportunity to say thank you to Randy. So we'll just have a minute of gratitude right now. And I'm just going to unmute everyone now.
Thank you.
Beautiful, beautiful energy. Thank you.
Thank you, Randy.
Very honored.